Welcome into an overdue episode of the Colin Podcast, recording just past the bottom of the 1 o'clock hour in Boston on Tuesday, April 27th. I'm Alex Barth, as always, joined by Alex Lebowitz, powered by CLNS Media. It's been 2 weeks, 3 weeks since we did a show. Just the draft has me everywhere.
Yeah, it's been about 2 weeks, I believe. We took last week off, and I know it's been a hectic. It's really been a hectic, like, 2 month process for you. I feel like ever since the Super Bowl has ended, you have been in draft mode. I've lost count of how many mock drafts you've done, but the coverage has been phenomenal. I guess I want to start off. How are you doing? It's finally here. You must be relieved, tired, stressed, anxious. How are you feeling?
Well, it's first of all, okay. So first of all, I released mock draft 7. This morning, officially, 7 officially, and then I'll have 8 tonight with Evan Lazar, Tuesday night. Unofficially, the number's probably in the hundreds. How am I doing? I'm doing good. I'm excited. I mean, I'm a little stressed, certainly. I want to see how it goes. But this, you know, it's not here in the sense that we still have silly season going on. An NFL writer tweeted earlier today, would the Patriots trade the 15th pick for Jimmy Garoppolo? Absolutely not. And then, honestly, a big part of what's fun about the draft is the week after and breaking down all these players and seeing where they fit. And I love the UDFA process and that kind of 12-hour window. So I'm just geared up. I'm excited. I'm anxious, I think would be the best word. I'm anxious. I'm done with the prep, and not that I didn't enjoy it. I very much enjoyed it, but, like, let's go. I'm ready to have some tangible. I'm kind of, you know, ironically, as we're about to do for the next 20 minutes, but I'm kind of sick of saying, well, if he goes here, then who goes there? And if so-and-so goes here, then so-and-so goes there. Like, let's do it. Let's get into it. Let's analyze instead of predict. So that's where I'm at with it. But it's all fun.
Yeah, and I feel like the pandemic kind of adds to it. There's that, and there's obviously the main factor here in New England, which is the fact that Patriot fans, people who cover the Patriots and you know, fans alike, this is the most excited we've ever been for a draft ever. I mean, last year, the excitement wasn't there as much. You had a higher pick. It just wasn't the same. You were going to roll out with Stidham, and there was still hope that maybe he could be the guy. This time around, you have the quarterback, you know, discussion, that question mark. You have a number 15th overall pick, which is the highest they've had in some time, highest they've had naturally in a very long time, without having to trade up to that spot. And overall, it's just, there's a lot of question marks. Quarterback heavy draft class, a lot of talent, and I feel like this is the biggest rebuild we've seen with the Patriots, and this is kind of the culmination of that. It leads up to this draft.
Yeah, and so I guess let's start there with the quarterbacks, right? I think, so I personally, and I'm not alone in this, I'm not putting this out there as a hot take, right? I didn't come up with this. Justin Fields is the second best quarterback in this draft. He's probably the fifth or sixth best player overall, but he's the second best quarterback in this draft. And there is a chance, well, we more or less know at this point he's not going to go top three. He's not going to go top three overall. He's not going to go top three at his position. There's a real chance he starts to push 7 or 8. And that's, I mean, it's exciting, but it's also worrying. Because what the hell is going on that this supremely talented player has fallen? And I know that there's the report that he's dealing with epilepsy, and obviously that's a serious issue, but this was all happening before that. The Niners, it sounds like from the beginning, and we'll get into the Niners because we need to talk about the Niners and the people making the decisions there. But from the beginning, they've seemed disengaged on Justin Fields. And the Jets obviously were disengaged on Justin Fields. I'm not going to include the Jaguars in this because Lawrence is better. Some people are pushing it like there should be a conversation for the first overall pick. There shouldn't. That's Trevor Lawrence. But, you know, it's going to be really interesting because the tense moments are going to be, what does Atlanta do at 4 is the big one. And then I think 5 and 6, you're going to see Cincinnati and Miami stay. But once you get to 7, it's going to be, you know, pins and needles every pick. And how far does he fall? Because I think it would be nuts if somebody, whether it's the Patriots, the Broncos, Washington, doesn't trade up to that spot to try to get him.
And that's kind of what concerns me. I mean, that's obviously the biggest question mark. I think most people are in a consensus here in the sense that, you know, it's not Belichick like to trade up. But yeah, Justin Fields, if the rumors are true, if the reports are true that the Patriots are interested in him, and that the 49ers are pretty set on Mac Jones or Trey Lance, whoever ends up going at that three spot. You have teams that you have to fight with to get to move up in the draft, and you obviously don't want to overpay. And this is why my gut's telling me that it's not going to happen, that Fields will be gone before, obviously before 15, but before the Patriots even have a chance to move up. Because you look at the order, 7 or 8, maybe 9 is where they move up. But why wouldn't the Lions get a quarterback in round one? Why wouldn't the Panthers or the Broncos try to get a quarterback in round in with their picks? And why would they trade with the Patriots when they think they might have that guy? There's just so many question marks that go along with this. And I guess for me, my gut's telling me that it's just not going to happen. And maybe that's just me trying to let myself down easy, because I do want them to get a quarterback. It's exciting to get a first round guy who maybe could be the future. But the way that this draft is setting up, it just seems like it's going to be really difficult for them to make that happen, given the competition across the league to get the next QB.
So here's what I'll tell you to maybe get your hopes up, okay? First off, there was the report back in January from Tom Curran that they were going to be uncharacteristically aggressive. And I think we all agree they did that, right? They've done that so far to this point. Why would they do that in free agency, then suddenly stop at the draft in reverse course? That feels weird, right? To me, like, why? That's such a half measure. And this team really, say what you will about them being conservative, they might be conservative, but they don't do half measures. When they do something, they do it. The other thing is, when it comes to trading up, okay, they're not really, there's only one team above them that would potentially move up for a quarterback that can put out a better offer than they can, right? So what that means is the gem of the offer, unless they want to do something completely nuts and like totally sacrifice all their future assets, which I don't think that's on the table, but I'll put that disclaimer out there. As you know, the base of any offer to move up to get a quarterback is going to be the current first round pick. So those teams I named before, right? Washington, I forget, is either 20 or 21. Pittsburgh is 24. The Patriots are 15. They have that 15th pick. The only team that can compete with them is Dallas at 9. And I think Dallas is more – they still have Drew Luck, who's still a young quarterback who I still believe has upside. I think if a quarterback fell to them – like, this all started because they were in on Deshaun Watson, which I love Drew Luck, but if I can get Deshaun Watson, I'm going to get Deshaun Watson. I don't know that they're pushing to get a quarterback instead of maybe just using that 9th pick, if the guy's not there, to go out and get Locke some help, right? They need to rebuild that offensive line. They need some help in the secondary. I don't see them making that push to move up. Maybe they do. It's not unrealistic, but I don't necessarily see that. So if they don't offer that Patriots 15th pick, and again, maybe you have Minnesota at 11, some people have thrown out, but at the end of the day, that 15th pick is likely going to be the most valuable individual piece on the table when it's either Atlanta at 4 or Detroit at 7 or Carolina at 8, which is the spot I have circled. That's going to be the most valuable piece for that team. The other side of this is, let's say Denver does want to move up. If Denver moves up, I really believe their guy is Trey Lance, right? If Mac Jones goes third, like we think he will, I think Denver's guy is Trey Lance. He makes more sense for the system. If you let Denver jump you at 7, right, assuming the Falcons don't take a quarterback and you have Denver moving up to 7, the price at 8 steeply drops because there's no competition. Again, you have that best piece. You're the last team left needing a quarterback, and you're not paying for the choice of quarterback. You're getting who you got by default. So there are ways they can make this happen. I don't think it comes down to whether or not they can trade up to get their guy. I think if Fields is there at 7 or 8, they have the tools to make that happen. It's a question of, does he get there? And that kind of hinges on what Atlanta does. Does he get there? And then if he gets there, are they willing to pull the trigger on that trade? Because there is a trade they can make to get there, I think.
So this is a big question. Multi-part. You think the Dolphins are set with Tua? Do you think the Panthers are set with Darnold?
Kind of.
And I mean, the Cowboys have to be good with Dak Prescott, obviously.
Yeah, they just gave him an extension. That pick is going to be a cornerback. I think maybe like if Fields gets to 10, it's an easy trade. You give up one to flip from 10 to 15. Dallas is still going to get J.C. Horn. I just don't know. Like, don't let him get to 10. Get up to 7 or 8 at that point. But go ahead.
Yeah, how much stock do you put into the relationship between Belichick and Flores? Obviously, the Dolphins moved up. They traded with the Eagles to move up to the sixth spot. There's got to be somebody they're eyeing there. But do you think that that's potentially a trade partner? Because the Lions seem to be like the one team that you have to compete with right now for that quarterback. You mentioned the Broncos, but Trey Lance, if you're right, he's a system fit. You're not competing with them directly, although that would take an assumption on Belichick's part. Do you think that there's an opportunity for a deal to be made between the Dolphins and the Pats, or will the price be too steep?
So I think, because remember, Miami was originally 3. They traded down to 12 with San Francisco, then moved back up to 6. I think if Miami didn't have a guy they wanted in the top 6, whether it's Pitts, whether it's Sewell, whether it's Chase, if like Miami has a guy they want with that pick, and that's why they moved back up. That's also why I don't think it's a quarterback, because you're not guaranteed anybody at 6. You're not going to shoot back up from 12 to 6 without knowing for sure that you can get your guy. And they can't know that for sure right now at 6. So I think they have either one of the pass catchers, one of the top 3 pass catchers, or Sewell in mind. And again, if they were willing to move back, right, they would have just stayed at 12. They wouldn't have paid that extra first round pick to move back up to 6. I think that's off the table. Again, I think Detroit's an interesting one, because to me, they're in a perfect situation to draft a quarterback. They have Jared Goff as the bridge. They're going to be bad. But all the reports are they kind of believe in Jared Goff. And Dan Campbell's also not the kind of guy who's going to draft a quarterback. He's kind of one of these old school smash mouth football people. I actually think that pick's going to be defensive. I wouldn't be surprised if that's where Micah Parsons goes. Some people have him falling a little further. I really like Micah Parsons for the 7th pick. If it's not Parsons, I think you see one of the wide receivers go there. 8's interesting with Carolina. And that one, I think, is really getting slept on, because Darnold is only on a 1-year contract, right? He has the option. A 2-year contract. He has the option. He's not, you can't be totally sold on him yet. But the thing is, right, if I'm the Patriots and I'm going to Carolina, it's like, look, you're not going to get to pick your guy, right? If Carolina loves Fields, there's nothing you can do. If they love him, that's the pick. It is what it is. But where you can go to them is kind of say, look, you don't know that Sam's the long-term fit, so we're going to load you up with future assets, and then you get to find out what Sam Darnold is this year. And then next year, you know, we'll give you our first and our second next year, and then you can kind of shoot up the draft board next year and grab a quarterback and trade into the top 5 and get a better shot at the quarterback than you have this year if Sam doesn't work out. Like, that's the pitch I think you make. And unless the Panthers are absolutely sold on the fifth of the last of the 5 quarterbacks on the board, I think it makes a ton of sense for them to move that pick, because they're probably not going to get one of the 3 pass catchers. They really kind of need an offensive lineman. They're going to be able to get a good offensive lineman at 15, whether it's Darisau or Slater, maybe Tucker from USC. But I think that Carolina pick is primed to move. I think Detroit keeps their pick. I don't think they go quarterback. I think they keep their pick. Same with Atlanta. I think they want to give it one last shot with Matt Ryan. I don't think they move. I think they keep their pick. Carolina's the spot to me where the Patriots need to go up and get that last quarterback.
And simply in part to jump ahead of the Broncos, what if they don't get a quarterback? What's their move? I mean, if they don't get a quarterback, we can assume they're not trading up. They'll wait till
I'm not totally sold on that. If because some people are saying Patrick Surtain could start to slip. If he gets to that range, I could so see it. Football family from Alabama, fits their player prototype, multi-year, like all of it, multi-year starter. Like, I could see them moving up for a guy like Surtain, or if Sewell falls, because some people think Sewell could fall into that 7, 8, 9 range. I don't think it's likely, but I'm not totally off on it.
Okay, so you think
blow up your spot? I just
no. So they could you think they could trade up potentially for non quarterback? That's interesting. I honestly never even considered that.
I don't think it's likely, and I don't necessarily think it would be the right move. But like, I wouldn't be, I would be more surprised. Like, it wouldn't floor me. They've done weirder things in the draft. It wouldn't floor me.
And if they go with Surtain, I mean, that writing's on the wall for a guy like Pat, like Stephon Gilmore.
Right. So then what you do there. Is you flip Gilmore for a second round pick and you kind of increase your assets, et cetera. So that's the thought process there.
Might be getting ahead of myself here. So let me know if you want to hold off on this okay. question.
Well, did you want to talk about if they don't take a quarterback in the first?
Sure. Well, who's the guy? I mean, like, what's the move? So you think certain guys fall, they drop out of that top five. Maybe they jump up and get that you know, non quarterback. That said, though, you think if that were the case, the quarterbacks would go quick. And a lot of guys would fall anyways, potentially to that 15th spot.
Yeah.
So what other scenarios do you see happening? How likely is it that we see a typical Belichick move trading out of that 15th to get later picks and to get more picks?
So I don't think they'll trade back because of what you just said. I think if so many quarterbacks go early, there's going to be players they have top 10 grades on sitting there at 15. And JC Horn's the big one for me. I've said if they stay at 15, I think Horn will absolutely be on the board. The corner from South Carolina, big, long, physical man corner, likes to hand fight. I mean, they're calling him like a younger Stephon Gilmore. There is a little bit of a tie there in terms of, you know, where he is now versus where Gilmore was coming out of the same school, actually, South Carolina. So, I mean, if they stay at 15, unless somehow Surtain gets there. I think I really like Horn. And then if I think a tackle's in play as well, right, with Isaiah Wynn, Trent Brown, both being on one-year deals, both being injury prone. And that could be Slater. That it could be. I like Darisau. I think I do have a tendency sometimes to like players based on availability, right? I'm not getting my hopes up about Slater just because I don't think he's on the board. So I've kind of been using Darisau as like my default. Oh, here's the tackle at 15. But I think if Slater's there, he's a good option. I think if they're both there, it's a very interesting conversation. So I think it's corner tackle at 15 if they don't end up with the quarterback. And then you kick the quarterback down the road, and if Mond or Trask gets to 46, you talk about that. Anything beyond those guys, I think, even with those guys, I it's not a great draft if they don't end up with one of the top five quarterbacks. But if they miss out on Mond and Trask, I mean, I know people like Davis Mills. He's Stidham 2.0. Beyond him, you know, at that point, just go sign somebody. Just like go sign Brian Lewerke. You had him in camp once at that point. Don't waste an asset because the guy doesn't have a chance to be the next guy. Then you hopefully, if you miss out on all those guys, you trade picks out, right? You try to accumulate assets for next year, just like what I just said about the Panthers, and you position yourself best you can for next year to move up the board and get, you know, one of the top two, one of the top three quarterbacks next year, whether it's Kedon Slovis, Desmond Ridder, Phil Dracovic, a guy I really like from BC. Like that has to be the plan. Once those top five are off the board, I think the plan has to be looking into next year and accumulating assets for next year.
So usually when you know, teams trade up, it's picks for picks mostly. Is there a player that you can see Belichick parting with, a player that might be more likely to be traded come Thursday night?
Yeah, I think Gilmore. I think Gilmore, especially if they take a corner early, is on the table because he's not going to play for $7 million. He's just not. And nor should he, by the way. Nor should he. He deserves more money than that. It's a weird situation where his contract got to this point. But, you know, if they pick up a corner, and there was a report from Girardi yesterday, they have a gap right now between 46 and 96. And that could grow if they trade up for a QB, right? It might take 46 to move up to 8 and get a quarterback. You can use Gilmore to erase that gap. I think you can get a second round pick for Stephon Gilmore, maybe a second and a third, maybe like two early thirds, something like that. So I Gilmore to me is that guy. I'm not saying they're going to trade him on draft night. I really don't know what's going on with him. It's a very odd scenario, very odd situation. But yeah, if there's somebody on the roster who could get traded, Gilmore, and then N'Keal Harry too. You know, there were the reports kind of during free agency that that Harry was going to get moved, and nothing really ever came of it. But it hasn't kind of been defuted either, right? It's still just kind of lingering out there. So N'Keal Harry is another one that I'm looking at.
So hypothetical, they go through the draft. Thursday night, Friday night, and all seven rounds. Maybe they get a quarterback round six, but not the guy. Like someone who will probably be in the practice squad.
So Felipe Franks is my guy for that, for okay. that fit.
And I mean, I feel like they do that every year, whether it's an undrafted rookie or you know, sixth or seventh round, like a Danny Etling type of guy. What's the move, though, if they just don't get a quarterback? Is Garoppolo the person they eye? And right now, do you look at this as kind of a waiting game to get past? I think it's that June 1st mark. Maybe restructure, wait it out to see if the 49ers just end up cutting him. What's the game plan there, and how likely is it that Garoppolo could be the next guy?
So, well, they can't afford Garoppolo right now.
So would they wait for him to be cut or do a restructure and then make that deal?
I don't know what's going to happen with Garoppolo because so he has a $26.3 million cap hit this year, $27 million next year. And by all accounts, he doesn't want to restructure that. And, you know, chalk that up to what it is. It is what it is. The Patriots can't afford that. There's only two teams in football right now that can afford it. I just saw this. The Jaguars were one of the teams. And I want to say the other was the Bears, but I'm not positive. But there's only two teams, and the Patriots weren't one of them. So on top of that, his trade value is non-existent at this point, especially after that fakakta press conference yesterday with Kyle Shanahan more or less threatening to murder Jimmy Garoppolo.
Which was awesome.
Maybe that, like, is that him trying to increase his trade value? Was that basically just like, hey, if you don't trade for this kid, I'm going to kill him. And suddenly it's not about football. It's about, like, humanity. But, you know, you come out, you admit that he has chronic health issues, that these issues – because if the issues were isolated incidents and it wasn't a chronic issue, they probably wouldn't be in the market for a quarterback. But Shanahan comes right out and says, we're not going to have the problem of Jimmy Garoppolo's injuries be an issue next year. So he admits the injury issues are chronic. He admits he thinks five rookie quarterbacks are all better than Garoppolo, which is not exactly a vote of confidence. And then that crazy line about, I can't guarantee anybody's alive by Sunday. If Garoppolo had any trade value before that, it's gone. At this point, I think the Niners are going to have to pay a team to take Jimmy Garoppolo off their hands. I think it's going to have to be a pick swap. So you look at San Francisco has the 30, right? I don't think it would happen with the picks this high, but as an example, San Francisco has the 30, I want to say fifth pick in the draft, I believe. You know, would it be Garoppolo and 36 for 46, right? Where the Patriots move up and get Garoppolo because they're taking on that contract. Now, and even still, I don't know if a team would do that. Because he has to be able to restructure, and he has a no-trade clause. So he's going to want to go somewhere where he gets to start, and that's only a handful of teams. So, and I don't know if San Francisco can cut him based on the cap issue. They blew this whole thing from the beginning. They made him completely unmovable. Now they have to get rid of him, and they're not going to be able to do it. So in terms of the Patriots, to get back to the original point, look, I'm sure Bill would love to bring him in as an option. I don't think he's a long-term option, again, because of the injury. Like, Shanahan's not wrong about the injury thing. You just don't say it. So I'm sure Bill would love to have him in, but there's just really no clear path to getting him right now.
So I'm looking at the website now. It says his dead cap is only 2.8. So theoretically, why they can't just – because that's why I think it could just get
to a point. Maybe they could cut him.
They could cut him, and then, you know, $3 million, what is that at the end of the day? It still gives you a lot of flexibility. That frees up $21 million of cap space, which would be big, big news for the 49ers. You could still rebuild that team and continue to do well. But if they can afford him also, it's not a bad idea to have the bridge guy in there. But again, why would Jimmy Garoppolo want to be a bridge guy when he could be a starting quarterback for a playoff team? Even if he's not that great, he comes to New England, he's a starting quarterback for a playoff team. There's no question about that. So to me, in the back of my mind, I think that's still like a decent possibility that Belichick is going into this being like looking at everything the way that you put it, which is the only team that could really afford him is the Jaguars. They don't need a quarterback. They're getting Trevor Lawrence. The Bears, I mean, they just got Andy Dalton. They seem sadly enough, they seem like they're all right with that move.
Like that's a wash to me. Garoppolo's a better player, but he's only going to give you about 8 games. So that to me is a wash.
So do you think Belichick looks at it that way, though? Or you know, maybe the durability question is not as big of an issue for him.
So I think it could absolutely turn into a game of chicken where the Niners have to get rid of him. The Patriots want him, but they don't want to trade for him. And they basically, and you were right about the dead cap, by the way, good call. So they could release him. And the Patriots basically say, do it. Why would we give you anything for this guy? He doesn't want to be there. You don't want him there. Mm-hmm. Right. And that's where it goes back to, again, maybe San Francisco pays the Patriots to take him off their hands. Maybe it's, and this would be after the draft, maybe it's, hey, you know, you give us a future fourth and we'll give you a future third, something like that, right, to take on this contract. But again, the Patriots can't afford him, so he has to be willing to restructure. It might just be Bill waiting for him to get cut. But then you get into, too, you know, how logically are the San Francisco 49ers operating right now? They're going to pass on the second best quarterback in the draft in terms of raw talent. They're going to pass on an elite upside quarterback in the draft with the perfect bridge guy in place to take Mac Jones is essentially Jimmy Garoppolo without the health issues. And now that's not nothing. And I like Mac Jones, but and they admitted this more or less at the press conference yesterday. They didn't need to trade up as high as they did to get Mac Jones. That was a mistake. They made that mistake. They overpaid. And even if Mac Jones is good, they overpaid. They did not need to do that. And so they're going to do that, right? They traded up too high. They're going to take Mac Jones, who's the wrong pick. I think there's some infighting between John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, because the reports right now are Shanahan wants Lance. Or sorry, Lynch wants Lance. Shanahan wants Jones. You have the GM and the head coach fighting. That's probably not pretty. Like how, and then on top of all that, until basically yesterday, the belief was they were looking for a first round pick for this guy. So how fast are they going to go from expecting a first round pick to releasing him? And will they do that? Like, it looks like it's just utter chaos over there right now. It's hard to say that they're going to do the logical thing and cut him, because mm-hmm. The logical thing would be for the Jets to draft Justin Fields, but that's another story. The logical thing would be to just draft Justin Fields and let Jimmy be the bridge for a year.
That seems to be the best move. And you know, I think that they might have no problem going that route. Also, if they wanted to trade Garoppolo, the time to do that would have been, you know, 2 months ago. But really,
I think they could have gotten a mid-round pick, a third, fourth-round pick for Jimmy Garoppolo. I think that there was a time
they could have gotten a second. I think you look at what Donald went for.
Maybe you're right. Maybe, but they blew it. They blew it, and then Shanahan comes out yesterday and again tanks his whatever trade value he had left. They absolutely blew this. And I say this about the Jets all the time, right? You've heard me say this about the Jets, that, you know, they should do one thing, but it's hard to predict it because they're just acting so unpredictably. Mm-hmm. And the Niners are entering that territory where, you know, yeah, cut Garoppolo, duh. But they don't seem to be operating in the realm of reality. So it's really hard to project forward what they're going to do.
So I mentioned the relationship between Brian Flores and Belichick earlier and how that could potentially lead to a trade. There's an obvious relationship between Kyle Shanahan, really Mike Shanahan as well, and Bill Belichick. Garoppolo was dealt to the 49ers. He gave him great value for that deal. Only a second round pick.
They fleeced him.
They fleeced Belichick. They did. And then they signed him to a contract that was probably too much, as we found out. Does that play a role in any potential move here? And do you think that would make a deal more likely to happen between the Patriots and the Niners with Garoppolo?
Well, again, Garoppolo has that no trade clause. And I think
that's what it comes down to for you.
I mean, I think that certainly helps that, you know, it's kind of up to him where he wants to go. He's been here. Like, how did he like it here? And how did he leave things with Bill? We don't really know the answer to that. And remember, he was a little kind of, you know, suck on that after he came in and beat the Patriots last year. So, you know, maybe there's bad blood between him and Bill, and that could certainly be an issue. I'm not saying there is. I don't know there is. I don't think there is. But if he wants to come back to New England, yes, I think it helps that Bill Belichick's getting a known commodity. I think he'd prefer that. And Josh McDaniels as well is getting a known commodity. getting a guy he's thought highly of in the past. It just comes down to that injury thing. And is Bill Belichick willing to overlook it? We know he's kind of looked in on Garoppolo in the past, and that tells us two things. He is open to it, but at the same time, he checked in on Garoppolo early this offseason, didn't get him, which means that there was a holdup. He wasn't willing to pay the price, and I think that does have to do with the injury thing, and that goes back to what you said. You can't pay a guy $26 million or at least have $26 million hit against the cap for a guy who you can't count to be out there week in and week out. Now, if you can get him on a near minimum deal, yeah, it's absolutely worth the flyer, but it's just so hard to say with his inability to stay on the field and the fact he's 30. He's now 30. He's not, you know, this isn't a prospect we're talking about anymore. Even if they get Garoppolo, let's say Garoppolo gets cut and signs to like a 3-year, $30 million deal, which I think is the best case realistic scenario. I still don't know that that's your quarterback of the future. Is he going to make it through all 3 years? He'll be 33 with his injury history. You know, you still need a future plan at quarterback. So I don't know how much that ultimately changes things.
And then there's also the factor you already have an injury prone quarterback. So that said, you know, Cam Newton's deal is very cheap for the Patriots. It's mostly incentive based. So if he plays well, he'll get what he deserves and he'll make more money. But if he doesn't, it's not that big of a risk on the Patriots' end. Is it worth bringing in another guy who you, as you pointed out, you'd have to sign for probably more money when he has a similar issue as Cam Newton, which is durability, staying on the field?
Well, Cam played through injuries last year. Cam, like, it's a different issue. He was hurt, but he played, and I'd rather have that guy. But you're not wrong. But again, it goes back to Cam Newton's 32, is on a 1-year contract. Garoppolo's 30 and has his injury history. You're just kicking the can down the road at that point. I would still say let's say they go into this season with Newton and Garoppolo as their two quarterbacks, right? And Stidham, whatever. Even if one of those guys plays really well and they win a couple games, they win some games, maybe they even win a playoff game, I would still say quarterback is a major need. I would still say they don't have a future plan at quarterback, because the way they look at things, they look at NFL teams build. You build for this year, you build for the 5-year outlook, right? NFL teams are big on the 5-year outlook. Even if Garoppolo comes in here, what's the 5-year outlook at quarterback? It's not great. No. So like, even still, like, maybe you're a better team in 2021, and that's not nothing, right? You go out, you spend a ton of money in free agency. You should be trying to compete. So absolutely, like, I'm not saying don't do it, but you're not solving all your problems. You're still back, you know, hypothetically in the first round for a quarterback next year in the draft. That's ultimately what it comes down to me, is can we just answer this long-term quarterback question so we can be done having this conversation that we've been having for the last 2 years? Whether they draft Justin Fields, Trey Lance, Mac Jones, even if it's maybe Kellen Mond, We there's somebody to be hopeful about in terms of the long term. We don't have to keep doing this carousel, which is kind of what I'm looking at.
Okay, so my last question on this. Yeah. Obviously, you mentioned Tommy Curran brought it up earlier in the offseason. The Patriots were going to be uncharacteristically aggressive this offseason. You mentioned a 5-year outlook. I think a lot of people are wondering, is Belichick going to be an NFL coach? Head coach in 5 years, does he want to continue? Not to say that, you know, his job security is in jeopardy, but will he want to retire at some point? I think he's approaching 70, 69 or 70 at this point. I think he just turned 69.
69, yep.
Nice. What role does Belichick being in the place he is in his career, in your opinion, play in regard to this uncharacteristic aggression? Is it just the evolution of, you know, the greatest head coach of all time that we've seen over the past 40 years? Or is it the fact that, you know, he's coming to the end of the line and maybe he figures this is the time that he needs to be uncharacteristically aggressive?
So it's an interesting question. I think part of the aggression was they had more cap space than they'd ever had. And that's independent of Bill Belichick's age. They always spend up to the cap. They had a ton of money to spend. They spent it. And it's been reported for years now. I mean, this is going back to, you know, after the Falcons Super Bowl, I think after the Seahawks Super Bowl, that something Belichick wants is he doesn't want to be one of these, like when Landry left the Cowboys, right? They were a mess. The Dolphins haven't recovered really after Shula. I think, and it's been out there that Belichick doesn't want the Patriots to fall apart without him. He wants to build a team that continues to win after he leaves. And that is part of his legacy, that he set them up for the next era. So I think this is part of this. At the same time, to spend all of that money that they did, right? To be as aggressive as they did and get all those awesome offensive pieces and put them around this iteration of Cam Newton, or put them around Jimmy Garoppolo, or put them around Kellen Mond or Kyle Trask. You know, it just feels like you're giving the keys to a Lamborghini to 12-year-old. And like you're not, you know, if you have a finely tuned race car, you want a real driver, an expert driver behind the wheel. And that's what they're missing right now. They're missing the driver. So look, I don't know that Fields is that guy, but I think he has the potential to be that guy. And I think he has the potential to be it right away. And if they can, like, if he trades for Garoppolo, right, or signs Garoppolo, yeah, they have a bunch of talent, but you're still missing that key piece. And I don't know that if he wants to step away in a year, 2 years from now, that he can feel like he'll step away and the team is set to continue to succeed, because they're going to be right back in that quarterback carousel. If he drafts Justin Fields or Trey Lance or Mac Jones, that's somebody who actually has the potential to carry this team for 10, 12, 15 years. And then you look back and say, yeah, Bill's last move, right? He wants that last move to be a move that echoes for a decade, right? If his last big move is, and I'm not saying he'd retire after this season, but if his last big move is drafting Justin Fields, and maybe coaches for another 2 or 3 years, but if his last big move is drafting Justin Fields, and Justin Fields turns out to be the real deal, then that's the legacy. Then the legacy is, not only was he successful, but even down to the end, he continued to make them a better team beyond when he was on the sideline. And that's why that kind of pushes me towards just go get the quarterback.
Mm-hmm. I said that was my last question, but no, what
this
you
is
just good. Said,
I mean, we didn't really know what we were going to do with this segment. This is where it was working for me. I'm talking.
This is great. Well, I'm not somebody. I don't pay. I haven't studied the film like you have. I'm also not a reporter for the New England Patriots like you are. So I'm picking your brain right now. This is great.
This is good.
You mentioned Fields, Jones, Lance. They trade up for all three of those guys, or is Fields the only guy that you think they'd be willing to do that for?
I think they trade up for Jones, probably not as high. I think Jones, you start looking at the 10th pick, 10, 11, 12. I don't think they trade up for Fields is really Lance is really weird. I don't know that they trade up for Lance schematically. So when we talk about quarterback fit, right, we talk a lot about, like, people want to talk about stylistically. And stylistically, Lance is the best fit for the Patriots in this draft. But it goes beyond style, especially where the Patriots are at this year, I think. And it's really a culture change. And they're trying to get ready for the post-Brady era. And, you know, who's going to be the fit organizationally? Who's going to be the fit culturally? All that. And I'll have this out later today for 985thesportshub.com. Of the last five quarterbacks they've drafted, four have been from the SEC and four have been transfers. And that, to me, just speaks to experience. They want guys who have played a lot, who have played in different systems and have played against high level competition. Lance hasn't done that. He played one season at the FCS level. So I don't know how, even though he's a ideal schematic fit, I don't know how excited they'd be about Trey Lance as a cultural fit versus, you know, again, Justin Fields, both SEC and a transfer quarterback, transfer from Georgia to Ohio State, Mac Jones, SEC quarterback. Lance just doesn't, he doesn't have that same background. He doesn't have that same career arc that I think is something they put a lot of weight on. So I don't know that they trade up for him, but they might. I mean, they might. Again, schematically, he's a great fit, and the upside's tremendous. So he checks those boxes, which maybe a guy like Justin Fields doesn't check. They'd have to change up their offense if they brought Fields in. But I think the talent is worth it, and I think the background makes a lot of sense. Whereas with Lance, I think there's just a lot of questions about the makeup that – they can't answer until they get him in the building. And that's a monumental risk, especially if you trade up.
So it seems like you're iffy on Lance. With Jones,
no, I love Lance as a prospect. I just, with the Patriots, I don't know that they will see him as a fit. Yeah.
Yeah. So are those guys all starters right away? You mentioned Fields, and I think you said that that's a guy who starts right away.
Did I hear that correctly? Yeah. So I don't think Bill will start a rookie quarterback. I think if he had Lawrence, I don't think he'd start him right away. Bill Belichick never plays rookies early in the season. He doesn't do it. I think Jones is the most NFL ready, and I think that's why the Niners like him, right? I think Fields can realistically start during year one. I don't know that he starts week one, but he's a guy that I think you do essentially what the Dolphins did with Tua last year, right? You look at where the bye is, and or maybe if it's an early bye or a late bye, you use a Thursday night game as a de facto bye, but you basically figure out, okay, we're going to give him 4, 6, 8 weeks, and then we're going to make the change regardless of what's happening. Lance, I think, and this is part of it, Lance needs at least a year. I think Lance is a guy who is going to need, you know, adjust to the speed of the game, adjust to an NFL playbook, adjust to the system, because there's not a ton of NFL systems like the one he ran in college. He's going to take a little more time. Now, that's not a knock. And again, if you're a team like the 49ers, who has Jimmy Garoppolo in place, who's a capable starter, who's been to a Super Bowl, why wouldn't you take Trey Lance, who you can give that year of development, and he might have the highest upside of any of them outside of Lawrence. The physical tools are impeccable. He throws a great ball, and he's big, and he can run defenders over and all of that. So I love his upside, but he's got a ways to go compared to the other ones.
And it does seem like with the 49ers, it could go any which direction. And when they say they have five guys that they like at that three spot, why are you trading up there in the first place, as you mentioned?
Exactly. And if that's a lie, why say it? Because you're hurting Garoppolo's draft stock. Like, none of what they did made sense in that press. It was bizarre. It was so just – I'm starting to – like, shit, I've done my Bruce Arians rant on this show, right? Kyle Shanahan's kind of starting to enter Bruce Arians territory for me. He's thought of as one of, like, the elite coaches in the league. What exactly has he done besides tank not one but two should have been easy Super Bowl wins? Like, and I get he's a brilliant play designer. That's not wrong. But there's some coaches that are just meant to be coordinators and not head coaches, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I would rather have if my head coach is going to be my play caller, I'd rather have a guy who calls vanilla plays at the right times than extravagant plays at the wrong times. That's just me. So,
and that, just a side note there, it is very interesting to see what's going on in San Francisco because, you know, there seems to be maybe a little bit of division between Lynch and Shanahan. You're bringing in a new quarterback. They're going to take a quarterback with that three pick. Ideally, you'd want your head coach, Shanahan, to mold that guy. But if that relationship is starting to get on the rocks, and like, let's be honest, 49ers are a very good organization. Doesn't seem like that's going to, you know, lead to Shanahan being fired, but we've seen crazier things. There could be some instability there, so it's going to be interesting to watch unfold. So I'll finish with this. This is actually my last question.
All right.
Because I know you love bold predictions. Do you have one for this year's draft? What's your bold prediction? Let's keep it Patriot-centric.
Okay. No, I was actually going to give you a Patriots one. I have a good Patriots one for this. I think the Patriots take a running back before they take a wide receiver.
Okay.
You know, is that bold? Does that count? Is that bold enough?
I think most people are hoping that they don't take a wide receiver in general, given the track.
Well, no, people want them to take a wide receiver. They just are dreading the outcome, and people don't want them to take a running back. I don't think they take either high, but you know, if you just look at the roster construction, you're going to carry four tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
You already have five wide receivers who are going to make the roster. That's nine pass catchers, right? And that's not including Slater, by the way. That's nine pass catchers right there. And then on top of that, so if you add a wide receiver, that's six. Are you going to carry six wide receivers when you're mostly going to be in 12 personnel and only two receivers are going to play most of the snaps? Like, I just think it's – unless it's a project pick late who you're stashing on the back half of the roster and maybe are playing special teams, like, if you take a wide receiver high, I don't know where he's playing unless they trade N'Keal Harry. If they trade N'Keal Harry, that opens up a spot, which I think is possible. Like, you trade N'Keal Harry for a fourth, use the fourth to take a wide receiver. Boom. Everybody gets a fresh start. But, I don't really see the room on the roster for a receiver. I don't see the snaps available for a receiver with a somewhat premium pick.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, at running back, Sony Michel's entering the last concrete year of his deal. James White's on a one-year deal, is about to turn 30. Rex Burkhead, free agent, recovering from the knee injury. And they don't like to play rookie running backs at all. So you're definitely going to need...
Damien Harris, too.
And they, well, they have... So Damien Harris is locked in, you're right. But the point is, you know, you're going to need a pass catching back next year. And that's an important role. You really need one this year. And I don't know how much the guy will play as a rookie, but you really need a second pass catching back this year behind James White. And you're probably going to need to replace, and White could be gone next year and that guy could be the starter. And you're probably going to need to replace Sony Michel as, you know, your spell option for Damien Harris. So they could need two running backs next year. And because they don't play rookie running backs, they know they need to get that guy this year so they can redshirt him so he's ready in time. So I don't think, you know, some people have floated them taking a running back in the first round, like, you know, Najee Harris. I don't think they do that. But, you know, that first pick on day three, 120, or maybe even 96, if they keep 96 at the end of the third round, as much as people would hate them using the Brady pick on a running back, like, you know, once you kind of get out of that top 100, they got three picks, 120, 122, 139. I would not be floored if one of those picks is a running back. And then later on, because they like to take running backs, I've noticed this, they like to take running backs when the picks are bunched together. So they have 120, 122, 139. And then later on, they have 177 and 188, which is an 11 pick, you know, kind of back to back there. One of those, in one of those two spots, I would not be shocked if there's a running back.
And then there's also the undrafted element. One guy we didn't mention, what's it, J.J. Taylor?
J.J. Taylor to me is kind of his own thing. Like, maybe he's a, you know, elusive guy who you spell with Damien Harris. He's not the pass catching back. You know, people think of him and he's like elusive. He'd be good for that.
Yeah.
A huge part of that role, though, is pass blocking. And he's just not big. Like,
he's too small.
He's like 5'6". And, you know, nothing against the guy. I think he's a really hard worker. I think he's a good player. But, you know, what happens when J.J. Watt comes around the edge and is J.J. Taylor there? Like, that's not, you know, like Deion Lewis, right? I see him in Deion Lewis's role where the Patriots generally, their two early down backs are like power backs. Maybe they kind of go back to the Deion Lewis thing where you go thunder and lightning and you have Damien Harris running downhill and then J.J. Taylor, you know, as your change of pace back. And then again, you still need that pass catching back. So, and it's a good draft for him. Dimitri Felton, Rakeem Boyd, Chuba Hubbard, who I had in my mock today. Like, they can get a guy who should be able to contribute in that role outside of the top 100.
I think you've answered all of my questions.
All right, good. I'm glad. That was fun. Let's squeeze a little baseball and hockey in here, though, before we wrap it up. And because I mean, I just want to say this, Lebowitz, that as a whole, I'm enjoying the hell out of this baseball season. Whether it's, you know, we got a couple no hitters. We've had a bunch of good extra inning games, as much as I hate the extra inning rule. The Yankees blow. It's just,
oh,
you know,
yeah. It's awesome.
I think I don't know how many. It's been a couple of times, like two or three times a week where I'm getting ready to go to bed or something, and there's a baseball game on, and I'll stay up and watch the end of it. Like, I'm captivated by it. Obviously, that Padres-Dodgers series over the weekend was fantastic, but it's been more than just that. Again, the no-hitters, right? You know, just close games. It's been a really, really fun first month of baseball, and I think baseball needed that.
It's been great. It's been very good. I obviously, on the Red Sox front, they've outperformed, you know, what people expected. You're starting to see a little bit of a skid, especially the starting rotation and the bats. I mean, they're leaving too many runners on base. It's obvious. But overall, they're playing well, and there's definitely foundation there, and there's a potential playoff team there. Obviously, number one in the division. Overall, it seems like there's been a lot of exciting baseball. And you mentioned that Dodgers-Padres series over the weekend. I forget who tweeted it out. It might have been your coworker, fellow Ithaca alum, Matt McCarthy. I'm forgetting who it was, that it has a lot of like 04 Red Sox Yankees vibes to it.
It does. Yes. I didn't see him tweet that, but yeah, you're right. That's a good point.
And it's really fun to watch. You have exciting players on both sides. I mean, the Trevor Bauer Tatis, you know, matchup is awesome because you have two guys who are eccentric, have a lot of personality, and good for Trevor Bauer to come out and be like, no, he should be, you know, taunting if he gets the best of me. I think that's great. I think that adds to the game, and I think that those are reasons why people are responding so well. Just to be negative for a second, though, and you mentioned it, I'm not a fan of the seven-inning doubleheaders. I'm not a fan of the runner on second base to start extra innings. I just find both of those rules to take away from the game. It makes them, you know, more little league-esque than, you know, the major leagues. And I just don't like it. Call me a purist, but I don't like it. I also don't think it makes sense from a speeding up the game standpoint. Obviously, you shorten the game, it's going to speed it up. But that's not baseball. Baseball is a 9-inning game. Even at the college level, they'll do a doubleheader. One game will be 7 innings, the next will be 9. So they're playing more baseball than you at a less competitive level. Number one,
I don't think they do. I think they do both. Oh no, you're right. No, it's 9 and 7. That was just a COVID thing last year. Was 7?
Yeah, it's 9 and 7. At least, that's how UMass Lowell. That's how that conference does. And I think that's NCAA in general. And obviously, extra innings. You put a runner on second. I mean, it's just it's a head start. I don't like it. And it also doesn't address the root of the problem, which is the speed of the game in innings 1 through 9.
Right.
How about we speed up that part of the game before we address doubleheaders and extra innings? I just find that it's not a fitting remedy for that issue.
So that's what baseball loves to do, I think. They love to solve small problems and label it as solving a big problem. Like, remember the intentional walk thing when they said, oh, you don't have to throw the pitches, just send them to first. Like, okay. I'm not opposed to it. It's not a bad idea, but I mean, I did the math once. I think it saved every team on average about 2.5 minutes per season over the course of 160.
How many intentional walks? Like, you see, you're lucky if you see one intentional walk per week.
Right. If we were seeing enough intentional walks where it was a problem, that would be great, because it would mean we're back in the steroid era and you wouldn't need to speed the games up because they'd be fun. But yeah, you know, baseball loves doing again. And it's like, they're like, oh, we sped the game up. And it's like, oh, not really. Like, maybe one game a week by like 10 seconds. And then the extra inning runner on second, like with the Dodgers Padres game the other night that went to extras. That was a good game. I was invested in that. I didn't need that game to go any faster. I was enjoying myself. I was fine with the pace of that game. That's not the game we need sped up. We need the, you know, 10-2 by the fourth inning sped up. That's the game we want sped up, not the good ones. So, yeah. No, I agree with you. But I mean, it is interesting, though, I will say that we get the strategic element. I'm still waiting for teams. I don't know why you see teams do this in the playoffs, right? The 04 Red Sox, they kept Dave Roberts on the bench, and he was basically just, they'd put him in when they needed a stolen base. Like, if I was, especially an AL team where you can keep a little bit of a deeper bench because you don't have to worry about pinch hitters, I would just go sign a track star, sit him on the bench, and whenever I go to extras, especially when I'm at home, all right, you're still third, and then boom, runner on third, no outs, one run to win the game. And then if I'm in the NL, what I would start doing is I would start going and trying to find the fastest pitcher. Like Clay Buchholz, people forget this. Clay Buchholz was like the fastest player on the Red Sox.
But do you recall when John Farrell did put him in to pinch run and he got hurt? He misread that double off the Green Monster. He left way too late. He was, not only did he get hurt, he was called out at the plate, I'm pretty sure.
Right. No, pitchers running the bases is usually a disaster. And right, Stephen Wright kind of ended his whole career with the base running injury a couple years ago. But, you know, just find one pitcher who's fast and just teach him how to run the bases. Just teach him how to run the bases. And then that way it saves you a roster spot. You can still do the thing. So I think as the strategy revolves around it, the runner on second thing will get better. It also doesn't exist in the playoffs, which is nice. Like, yeah, I can kind of live with it like the NHL shootout. We're like, it's not perfect, but the regular season is the regular season. It is what it is. I get it. You know,
how about we add points?
Keep it out of the playoffs.
Let's do the point system like the NHL then.
No, here's the thing. At least people have said that baseball should have ties. Get that the hell out. Watch a 25-inning game.
It's like kissing your sister.
It is the worst. And you know me, I will defend football tooth and nail. The one thing about football that is indefensible is that they are the only sport that allows ties. There should not be ties in sports. There just shouldn't be. They're wrong. Somebody was better than the other. That's just the way it is.
I will say, though, I feel like football is the only sport that can really get away with it. More just because it's rare. Maybe it happens twice in a season. But most of the times it's settled. Hockey,
that's two times too many, though.
Yeah. But there's no exciting alternative. I think you could go like the high school route and just put each team on the 10-yard line and just keep going at it, or maybe the 25-yard line.
I love the college overtime. The league will never do it because those stats count and it would screw with contract incentives.
Yeah.
So and then again, you'd have to say, okay, fine, but the overtime stats don't count. And the players would be like, well, put up those stats. We deserve to get paid for them. So that's, I think, what's holding that up.
I,
But
and just to bring this back, by the way, because over the weekend you had Madison Bumgarner pitch that no hitter in seven innings, and baseball, there's no sport, maybe not for the incentive aspect, but just in regard to how much people hold this, you know, thing, this arbitrary thing super high up. There's no sport in which statistics mean more to fans than in baseball.
Yeah, that wasn't a no hitter.
So you're not counting it.
Well, the official definition is nine innings.
Okay. So there's been dispute, and but you as a baseball fan, do you see it as a no hitter? You're just going off of the definition, the you know, what it was.
I would say he allowed no hits. I would not, by the definition, he did not throw a no hitter. I've worked games where somebody threw a no hitter in that sense and they didn't count. And I was upset about that because I wanted to call a no hitter. So if I don't, which I've done, I got to do it once, but yeah. It's nine innings again. Then you get into the weird thing where, you know, Pedro once threw a perfect game through nine. I think it was a perfect game. It was a no hitter, perfect game through nine innings, but the game went to extras and then he gave up a hit 10th. So if that doesn't count, how the hell does a seven inning no hitter count?
Yeah. And even Madison Bumgarner wasn't really that comfortable calling it a no hitter, which
here's
I found
what they should do. If it's scheduled to be a seven inning game, but one of the pitchers is throwing a no hitter, keep going.
Yeah, but then
I mean, they obviously, like, I'm kidding, but
yeah. It's exciting. They're putting runners on second and extra innings, so I guess nothing's off the table.
Right, exactly. You can say whoever's winning. Well, if you start a no hitter, his team's probably winning. But after seven innings, okay, that team's wins. But we're gonna make this guy throw two more innings because we want to see what would have happened. So,
how about if next start, if Madison Bumgarner doesn't allow a hit in the first two innings, we count it?
So that's what we did. I think it was UMass Boston where I it was like a back-to-back, you know, it was a doubleheader, and the starter threw a seven-inning no-hitter, and then he came in relief in the next game and threw two perfect innings. Or he might have walked somebody, but threw two innings without a hit.
That's dangerous.
So that day, I know, this kid was an animal. That day, he threw nine no-hit innings.
It counts to me.
So, yeah, it was, you know, so you never – and there was something weird where, like, the first batter he faced, it didn't perfectly line up like this, but the first batter he faced when he came in relief would have been the first batter of the eighth inning of the previous game had it been a nine-inning game.
So it kind of adds up. I think that's God saying
you
got a no-hitter.
I considered that a sign, but – all right, let's get some quick – I want to get some quick hockey talk in here too, and we're going long, and my voice is killing me if we're being honest. But so the NHL, they signed the deal with ESPN. Was that a month ago? About a month ago, right?
Yeah, the figures just came out. I'm not sure exactly when it was signed, but I know that the figures came out recently.
So they did that, and then now they signed this deal with TNT, and all of a sudden, right, the NBA has been a machine in part because ESPN and TNT have just built up such a culture around it. And it's easy to build up a culture around basketball. Basketball is a culture. Maybe hockey's not quite on that level, at least not in the U.S. It is in Canada. But, you know, I don't know that NBC worked with established brands, NFL, the Olympics. They didn't need any help from NBC to be what they are. ESPN has done a great job. I mean, look at what they've done with the WNBA in the last couple of years. And the surge in popularity with the WNBA and TNT has been a part of that as well. Like now ESPN is working with these networks who are sports only networks who are super in on promotion. And this is a huge opportunity for them because I think they are going to market guys like Connor McDavid, like Austin Matthews, like David Pastrnak, like their LeBron James or Giannis or Anthony Davis. And we'll see whether or not it sticks. But I think this is a huge opportunity for them.
I think it is too. My only critique is, you know, I wish they had done this 10 years ago.
Here's the difference. Now, I mean, social media just changes the whole game.
Sure. So, yeah.
I'll let you finish your point. I social media just changes everything.
It definitely does from a marketing standpoint, all that. But ESPN, you know, it's a way more even playing field these days. You know, the gap between ESPN and Fox Sports and NBC Sports, it's not nearly as wide as it used to be And some people might even put some of those other networks ahead of ESPN at this point. They probably aren't financially and with viewership, but it's not that far off. So, you know, the NHL is a sport that does.
In terms of what, though?
In terms of just prestige and you know, viewership, I think one of the biggest things that's happened at ESPN over the last 10 years is the decline in popularity in SportsCenter, which is, I guess that goes to your point about social media, which has changed, you know, that whole format. Right. You and I grew up every morning, every night, it's SportsCenter. We're watching it because that's how we got our sports news. You don't need to do that now. I never watch SportsCenter anymore, ever. I you know, the only time I'm really watching ESPN, to be honest, is four games. But, you know, I'm not tuning in like I used to. And I don't think most people are anymore, which changes the value of being, you know, broadcasted on a network like that. That was the prestige of ESPN. They were the sports media monopoly of the world. And you know, now that they've got the primary television rights of the NHL, it's great news. I think it's good for the NHL. I think it could help grow the sport. But if they had done this 10 years prior, if they had tried to make this work 10 years prior, which is something that, you know, I wanted back then, it would have potentially put the NHL in a position, you know, much further ahead than where they are now. Not to say that they're not in a good spot. They're continuing to expand. It's great, but it could have been done sooner. And I understand how television contracts work. You know, you sign for so many years. Sometimes the timing just isn't right. So I guess my main takeaway is this is good news. This is great. I'm happy for the NHL. I'm happy for hockey fans. But I think that, you know, all the benefits that come with the ESPN brand, it just isn't the same anymore. It's just not.
So the prestige, you're right, isn't there like as an institution. But again, what they've done building brands on social media, and again, to have Stephen A. Smith talking about hockey and just the ability, they can still make something the topic of the day. And I don't know that NBC was doing that, right? Like, you know, how many times does, you know, whether it's Get Up, whether it's The Jump, whether it's you know, First Take, whatever it is, one of these ESPN shows, one of the analyst says something ridiculous, and then that becomes the topic of the day. And that's what all the sports fans are talking about all day. You know, well, I don't know about this, about Tom Brady's career. And then we're spending the whole day, all of us, debating Tom Brady, right? NBC never did that for hockey. That hockey didn't really have those moments, at least not in this country. Maybe it did in Canada, but not in this country. But, you know, what happens when Stephen A. Smith comes on and says, Connor McDavid, overrated. Over, like, I don't know that he said, I don't know what his hockey takes are going to be, but like something explosive, or to keep it more local, Tuukka Rask is, you know, the best goalie in hockey. Like, maybe he comes out and says that. Again, I'm just coming up with hypotheticals, but, you know, ESPN is going to take that clip and put it out there where that will become the topic of the day. The NHL will become the topic of the day, and eventually people will start following hockey so they can take part in those conversations and be a part of the topic of the day. That, to me, yes, ESPN as the institution probably isn't what it was, right? SportsCenter isn't what it was, but their ability, and again, Fox does this too, and I think they do it well, right? Obviously they do it well. They got Skip and Shannon. I don't know that NBC was doing this. I don't know that NBC was doing this for hockey, where you would have, they had that ability to drive the national sports conversation. ESPN is going to be able to do that with hockey. Will they do it? How will they do it? I don't know. That's what we all need to see. You know, are they going to kind of purchase this and then keep it in the back pocket? Or are they going to put it out there like the NBA? We don't know. But they have the ability to, when they want, make hockey the topic du jour. And if they do that, it's going to be huge.
And part of me does wonder, because obviously ESPN has a partnership with the MLB as well, will this negatively affect exposure to the MLB, for example?
Well, it's weird because baseball doesn't seem to want to do that. Like, they don't want, you know, one of the talking heads to say, you know, I would take Mike Trout over Willie Mays any day. Like, they don't even want to consider the conversation. It's just shut. The old stuff is better. Don't talk about it. I think hockey, for lack of a better term, I think hockey would embrace debate. I just don't know that baseball as the sport is willing to go there.
Maybe not. But and the reality is they don't make baseball, you know, the forefront of their product in general.
Right.
Besides broadcasting these games, you know, Baseball Tonight, But even that, Baseball Tonight isn't what it used to be. At least I'm not watching it that much anymore. And then you have the MLB Network, which is a relatively new network. I'm sure, you know, a lot of diehard fans will go on there and watch the Heat, you know, watch Chris Russo or Kevin Millar, one of those guys. So it is different. I think the big thing here is the dynamic in you know, sports media has completely shifted, and there's just a lot of unpredictables here. But all in all, great news for the NHL, great news for ESPN too. And I hope this does help out because, you know, ESPN used to broadcast NHL games, but they were never the primary broadcaster for the NHL. This could be big. This could be great for hockey, as a sport in general. And I do wonder how this will alter, you know, their coverage. So it's going to be, I wonder, you know, what their broadcast will look like. I wonder what their broadcasting team will look like. That's a whole nother conversation to have, unless they've already come out with, you know, what they expect the booth and the analysts to be. But, either way, this is a big, big move. This is a massive sports media move. And then there's also TNT, which is going to have rights to hockey as well. So
yeah, and again, I think Turner can do some of this stuff too that I was talking about before. Like again, what they do with that set when you hear Shaq or Barkley or whoever, how they can get the conversation going. You got to find talent who can do that.
And that's if they can recreate what they have with, you know, Shaq and Chuck and Kenny and Ernie Johnson, all those guys. That would be huge, and I think like that show alone, I mean, they go viral all the time. They get players pissed off. They have animated interviews. That's half the battle. And I also think a guy like Ernie Johnson being your studio host, you know, that's incredibly valuable. That guy's one of the best in the business. Maybe they can get McHugh. Maybe they can try to purge him from NBC. Who knows? I think he'd be a good bet for that.
I think him and Tappan and some of these people will ultimately migrate over. So, I mean, it's who and how does it go? And also, I mean, they have some good talent. They have Melrose. They have Butch Across, right? Yeah, of course. I mean, I really enjoyed the college hockey playoff.
Linda Cohn.
Oh, that's right. Linda Cohn's a hockey. I always forget that. She's a hockey because I link her with football in my brain. But, yeah, she's a hockey person too. So that can be – that'll be fun. All right. We've been going for like well over an hour. So what a show. That was a fun one, I thought.
It was great. We'll be back. Draft preview.
Little bit. We'll be back next week. We'll recap the draft. We'll talk some basketball as well. Get into the Celtics. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Check us out online at clnsmedia.com under the podcast tab. Until next time, for Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.